from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, we have breaking news into the disappearance of Alabama teenager Natalie Holwood. I have spent most of the afternoon interviewing guests and trying to get the story behind the story. Tonight, we have Clint Van Zandt, Art Wood, Jossie Mansour, a little later on, the author of Into the Deep, Andrew Hodges. And then after that, we will have, who have we got? We have Susan Milano to come on and talk about some safety tips for those that are involved in domestic violence situations. And we're going to talk to Pat Pedraja. I remember him, the young boy with leukemia, who is now in the CNN Heroes Contest. We've got a busy night ahead of us. But we're going to get right to the breaking news involving the Kelpo brothers, Joran van der Sloot, and their rearrest today. And I spoke to Clint Van Zandt, someone very close to the investigation, someone who's actually sat down and interviewed one of the Kelpo brothers and got his thoughts about today's arrest. In our continuing breaking news coverage into the disappearance of Alabama teen Natalie Holloway and the news that came out today regarding the rearrest of Joran van der Sloot and the Kelpo brothers, I brought on as many people as I can this evening, and another person who has been very close to this case is Clint Van Zandt, retired FBI agent and author. Hi, Clint.
Hi, Dana. Good evening.
Your thoughts on the rearrest today?
Well, it's interesting. I, like others, have followed this. As you know, I was down in Aruba after the disappearance for 2 weeks reporting on this case for NBC and MSNBC television. I had the opportunity to interview one of the Kelpo brothers about the case. And I've also talked to the Dutch investigators, and I know one of the Dutch profilers who's involved in the case. So I know that the Dutch have never given up hope. They've always felt that they would be eventually able to solve this. And as you know, there have been approximately 10 different people who have been arrested in this case, to include the three primary subjects, Joran van der Sloot and Deepak and Satish Kelpo. But the authorities, the Dutch, and I think the Arubans, for whatever they've done, have kept their attention on those three suspects. As we know, today, information has come forward that all three arrest warrants have been issued for manslaughter for the two Kelpo brothers in Aruba and Joran van der Sloot, who's attending school in Holland. What's going to be interesting now is that the authorities suggest there is new evidence. So what that new evidence is, but realize you and I have also, and your listeners have followed the Drew Peterson case too, and right. We're now looking at, in that case, a three-year-old homicide, and the only new evidence that's come forward was a new suspect that's caused that case to be reexamined. So in the case of Natalie Holloway, whether it's perhaps one of the three primary suspects who have said something either intentionally or unintentionally, whether the authorities have finally put together the differences in their statements and feel there's something there to charge them with, or perhaps there's yet a fourth or fifth person out there who knows something about the case who may have assisted in the transport, for example, of Natalie's body, should that have been the case, or have some other unique knowledge that finally came forward. I can't imagine the Dutch nor the Arubans just doing this on a lark again, just bringing the attention back to themselves, unless they have something that they feel they can press forward. And one press release I saw suggested that this case would be brought to trial before the end of the year. Now, that's awful quick to bring a case to trial, whether that's just a typo on the part of the Arubans, whether that's an attempt by the Dutch or the Aruban authorities to put a tremendous amount of pressure on one of these three and try to get them to flip, or whether they feel they have such an airtight case they can press forward with it, that remains to be seen.
I've seen the same press release, and it makes us all wonder when we've seen so many arrests and releases, and you know, it's like a bad fishing show with catch and release with these guys, that finally, maybe, they'll have something here. Just before I let you go, physical evidence is huge in any investigation. We all are sitting here scratching our head. Is there some physical evidence? Have you heard anything?
No, I haven't. And it's, you know, Aruba, having been down there myself, I mean, that's a sieve as far as, from an investigative standard, it is an absolute sieve. If there's any the local newspaper has got it as fast, if not faster, than the police department does.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have moved through there, you know, like a foreign disease or something at this point. So, you know, I don't think Natalie's body's been found. It doesn't appear that there's any linking physical evidence. I hope there is, because there something like that is going to make a case. Otherwise, it may be a he said, she said, and we'll see if they can put that together.
Clint, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt covering the breaking news into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And someone else I sat down with this afternoon is the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Mansour. There's been no one closer to the case than Jossie. Let's see what he had to say. Hi, we're back. There's breaking news today in the disappearance of Alabama teen Natalie Holloway. On the phone with me from Aruba, Jossie Mansour. Hi, Jossie.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. We got breaking news. Apparently, our suspects have been rearrested on manslaughter charges. What can you tell us?
Yeah, sure. They were all three of them were rearrested. Joran, they had rearrested him in Arnhem, that's in Holland. He will be shipped to Aruba as soon as possible. And the two Kalpoo brothers were arrested here in Aruba for a couple of days, which is the law, and then afterwards they will be presented in front of a judge of instruction who will probably prolong their detention for as long as necessary.
Now, the arrest is for manslaughter is what we're hearing. What do you know? Obviously, some new evidence has come forward. Has anything been released?
No. As far as the evidence is concerned, we haven't been able to find out anything so far, but we know that the charges are involvement in the voluntary manslaughter on Natalie Holloway or causing serious bodily harm resulting in her death. Those are the charges.
There has been some news here lately that searches are underway or will soon be underway for Natalie. Have you heard any information about that, or is there the possibility that there may have been a body found?
I don't know whether the body was found or not. I don't think so, as we would have found out at the paper. But I do know that they are equipping a boat in the U.S., a group that is coming to Aruba to do a documentary on the Holloway case, about an hour or two-hour documentary, and that they are equipping a boat that will be here, I think, in the beginning of December to do another search on the ocean. That far we know.
This information, has it, or the rearrest today, is it a result of the, you and I have talked about this several times, about the extra investigation that was done by the team that we haven't heard of in a long time? Is this a result of that?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think that the local police did continue to work on the case. And I think that the Dutch investigative team that came, I mean the forensic people, they did a tremendous job here in searching the properties of Van der Sloot and then went back to Holland. We haven't heard anything more of them. It was a little disheartening for a while. But I think it's a combination of factors, both the work that they did in Holland on the case from beginning to end and the investigation that continued here by the local police.
When you heard the information or the news today as far as the rearrest, how shocked were you?
I wasn't shocked at all. I was expecting it much earlier than this because, if you remember correctly, Dana, we haven't seen any other kind of real serious evidence to point a finger to any other suspects. These are the three characters that were involved from the beginning, and these are the three suspects that we have been dealing with all along. So it wasn't really a surprise. It was a surprise in a way that they rearrested them now, because I thought that would happen later on in December, because they got a writ introduced in court here by the lawyers, the defense lawyers, demanding that the case be presented in court before the 31st of December, or else to scrap them off as suspects, I mean to release them as suspects.
Any information as far as when the first court appearance for the three will be?
2 days from now for the two Kalpo brothers, and 8 days from now for Joran van der Sloot.
Well, I'm sure you'll be quite busy covering this story, and we'll have you on again soon. I appreciate you stopping by, Jossie.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Jossie Mansour, managing editor of Diario. Someone else who is very close to this case, private investigator, former Secret Service agent Art Wood. I spoke to Art just a little while ago. We're back in our continuing breaking news coverage into the disappearance of Alabama teen Natalie Holloway. I have on private investigator Art Wood. Hi, Art.
Hi, Dana.
We heard, and I'm sure you have, the breaking news of the rearrest of the Kalpo brothers and Joran van der Sloot on manslaughter charges, I believe. Your thoughts?
It's very exciting. I don't want anyone to get too excited, though, because we've been so excited before.
Right.
Any way that we can get these kids back in jail excites me, because I know they did it. I hate to see anybody get away with this crime. I just hope that the Arubans really do have some new evidence.
And that's the important thing. We've been disappointed before. I just got off the phone with Jossie Mansour and did a quick interview with him also. It sounds like, although he doesn't have the details, that there is new evidence. Let's hope that this goes forward. One quick question, Art, before I let you go, and I appreciate your time with us today. This was unplanned and, again, breaking news, is we're hearing of a ship that has left the United States to go to Aruba to possibly do another search. What have you heard? What can you tell us about tonight?
Well, I'm not sure that's happened. There has been a number of opportunities to do a ocean search over there, and there was I don't know how to explain it. There was somebody that was going to provide an underwater vessel. I don't think it's left the United States yet, because I haven't seen the details of the search. We were going to do it last week of November, but that hasn't happened. To my knowledge, that search is not going to happen at this time. I'm hoping that situation can be resolved, and that we get the resources we need to do a proper underwater search.
Absolutely. And again, breaking news, the Kalpo brothers and Joran van der Sloot have been rearrested on voluntary manslaughter charges, I believe. This news is breaking, and we can all just hope for the best in this case. Thanks, Art. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Art Wood, private investigator who worked on the case. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute with the author of the new book, Into the Deep, The Hidden Confession of Natalie's Killer. That's Andrew Hodges, Dr. Andrew Hodges, and he'll be here to give his analysis of today's events and others. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. I have Dr. Andrew Hodges on the line with me, the author of the new book, Into the Deep, The Hidden Confession of Natalie's Killer. I know there's been a lot of breaking news today. I apologize for that slight delay. Everything seems to be happening all at once right here. Dr. Hodges, welcome to the program.
Dana, nice to be with you again.
Your thoughts on today's breaking news, the rearrest of the Kalpo brothers and Joran.
Well, I've been in touch with Dave Holloway for a long. I mean, we were talking this morning for about 45 minutes. He called me back around 3 o'clock and said that the FBI had called him and told him that they were arresting Joran and arresting Deepak and Satish, and didn't go any further than that.
Okay, can I just cut you off for half a second? That's something that I hadn't heard. The FBI was involved in this arrest, also, were they?
The FBI only knew about it.
Oh, okay.
They informed the FBI. They were,
okay.
You know, the FBI has no jurisdiction, and they are only
passing on information. Then
yeah. The Reuben police tell them what they want to know. Just like the FBI contacted me 3 weeks ago at the request of the Reuben government and, you know, investigators to qualify my profile. So that's
okay.
Kind of the function of the FBI. They serve at the behest of Aruba because Aruba's got jurisdiction.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I just wanted to clarify that. If you could continue on.
Sure, no problem.
If you could continue on with your thoughts on today's arrests.
Well, they call me, and also, you know, I've talked to the searchers. There's a definite search, you know, that's going to take place. And I know that Jossie was on earlier, Jossie Mansour, and mentioned something about a production company who is planning a search. I think also there's no secret that Texas Equisearch is planning a search, and I think there will be a definite search underway. I know certain boats will leave in the next few days. I don't know if the production company actually has boats out there, so I don't know what their story is.
Yeah, just to clarify what Jossie Mansour said, is it was a production company doing a documentary.
That's correct. They talked to me.
Yeah, and
I don't want to say who it is, but they have talked to me, so I'm aware of that. And I'm aware they were going to do a search. I don't know when they started.
So. Actually, they've spoken to me, too. And we just, there's some things that we can't release tonight, and that's one of
right.
the things, I think. Okay, you know, this is, it's a story that goes full bore, then slows down to nothing. And then when it comes back, it goes full bore. The family has had more disappointments than they've had good news. Your thoughts on, is this finally the good news? And then let's get into your book.
Well, you know, I think, as Jossie told me himself, that, you know, the profile that I said, Dave Holloway sent him my book, which is, you know, a profile of the case.
Right.
And Dave sent him my book, and then it was other authorities were also sent the book by Jossie, who was front page story in Aruba 2 times. Jossie told me it answered a lot of questions for him, and he thought for a lot of people. And I know the FBI contacted me at the request of Aruba within the last 3 weeks. So that says to me they're listening. I think if you combine that with a definite search, Aruba does not want to be caught empty-handed. They don't want the U.S. to solve the problem. They want to solve their own problem, and now they feel that a body's going to be discovered. I think this put a lot of pressure on them. This is a very sophisticated search. They know about it. They know about at least one of the searches, and so they're aware that there is an excellent chance of finding the body. I do believe that the profile, that Deepak in his profile and Yaron in their police interviews told us where the body was, so I think you've got several factors, but what these profiles show, what my profile shows, is it's an unconscious confession, and the criminal mind is so brilliant, the unconscious mind, it tells you, answers every question. So I think it provides ways to interrogate. It tells you exactly what happened. You know, so they know how to break these, and they're doing exactly right. They're breaking these guys up into three different, you know, individual interviews, and now they know that three of them were with her instead of this one-on-one beach story. I think the police are now convinced, more convinced, that they can, you know, that they have something to go on. And Deepak, basically, in the profile, he profiles himself. I interpret that, and he tells you how to investigate this case. And he talks about really dividing up the witnesses, getting to them, and I think that if they'll do that, they've got new information, and I think they now know the order of assailants. They know there were three assailants. They know who was third, who was second, who was first, what happened to Natalie. Then they know, you know, where the body is. And so I think they feel more confident. They should. And so I think they've got something to interrogate with, instead of Yaron left her on the beach and Deepak said Yaron did it and Yaron said Deepak did it.
Right, exactly. And when it comes to an investigation, the profile that you're talking about as an investigative aid, the recovery of the body as physical evidence and whatever else that they've come up with puts all the puzzle together. For those that are sitting back wondering, saying, what profile is he talking about? Let's get into that.
Okay. Well, you know, as from I've been with you before, basically, Deepak Kalpo, 5 days after Natalie disappeared, after a confrontation by Beth Twitty face-to-face that Monday night after Natalie disappeared on Sunday night, 24 hours later, Beth really confronted Deepak and Yaron in a very straightforward, very confrontive way, and this created a lot of guilt. They didn't give the body back, you know. They knew what happened. And by Saturday night, through several pressures I go into in my book, but Deepak wrote a five-page email, and in that is the whole story of the crime between the lines. It's an unconscious confession I profile using the unconscious mind. And so it's a story, and that took me a while to put it together, but then I put it together, and, you know, Dave encouraged Dave to continue the search, and I think it answers a lot of questions. So the profile came, Dana, from Deepak's five-page email. Then what surfaced were police interviews. Then what surfaced was Yaron's book. I need something directly from the mind of the perpetrator or suspect to then profile. I'm a mind detective, so to speak, but I have to have something straight from the mind of the suspects, which I had early on from eyewitnesses who were down there with Beth Twitty. I knew them, and so I knew something that went on the first night, but then I got this email. So that's the thing we're talking about, the profile from primarily Deepak's email, but also corroborated by Yaron's book, Police Interviews. Now I've got, you know, I've got all these interviews and to go on now. So that's, I profile from verbatim, straight from the mind, thoughts of the mind of the suspect.
If you're just tuning in, Dr. Andrew Hodges is here talking about his new book, Into the Deep, The Hidden Confession of Natalie's Killer. You mentioned Yaron's book. We've covered it here on my program somewhat,
right,
to the point that we didn't think anyone was buying it. But those that have looked at it and read it, including yourself, he says quite a bit. Share with us how you tie that into your book.
Well, what I do, Dana, is I look for, you know, there's always the cover-up story, the conscious story. So I read between the lines, and I read thought patterns. For example, one of the patterns that emerged in Deepak's email was that she was in the ocean. And you can go through various ways, but one of them was his emphasis. She was in the drink. She was filled with drink, which wasn't true, and he later said that he lied. But there was this great emphasis on Natalie having a lot of drink, a lot of liquids in her, which is a picture of drowning and so forth. But a lot of references is her being in the ocean. Now, move over to their interviews. Their interviews, their story was, their cover-up story was, we left Natalie on the beach alone. Both Deepak and Yaron and Satisha, all, you know, they all stick with that. And then they theorize, well, maybe she drowned. So just stay with it. Leaving Natalie on the beach alone is symbolically, we left her in the ocean alone, and she drowned. Do you see how they throw in drowning? So you just read the thoughts, the repeated thoughts. They link her to the ocean. And so they link her to the ocean in the Deepak's email, in Yaron's book, in their police interviews, and they theorize what happened, you know. And so that's how I think it's valuable to, you know, that's how I profile. I've got to have something to go on straight from the mind of the criminal. And then, so they gave you clues. Yaron's book was filled with clues. He gave you some significant clues on what happened. For example, he told a story of an assault in the back of a group sex in the back of a Honda. Three guys, he's one of the three, and there was a girl.
Right.
And he told it that three guys were around, and there was this girl having sex in the back of the Honda. Well, there's a picture of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys, and I'm convinced that the profile shows the place was not Yaron's apartment, but it was their car. It was Deepak's car, and if you recall, that's what they were cleaning. So Yaron's stories match symbolically the ideas. You have to read deeper, you know. Three guys with a girl in the backseat of a Honda in a story matches what happened with Natalie. You see, that's how you read it. And so you just read it for the content, the symbolic content, and that clarifies it for you.
Right, and we don't want to give away all of the book. Obviously, we want people to pick up the book. It's a fascinating read. But something that was speculated heavily into this investigation at the start and then slowed down, we haven't heard much about it lately, but I'm sure it'll come back again. But you do cover it in your book, is the alleged involvement of the father, Paulus van der Sloot.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. You know, the police, I'm told, from, you know, people that have been involved, including Dave Holloway, I was told that the police, their thought was the father was only involved later. The profile shows that unquestionably he was involved early. Now, think of, and we could talk about why, but think of it this way. I talked to every I talked to a lot of kids, boys that were on that trip with Natalie from Mountain Brook, and I talked to other young college boys. To the person, they said, if I took a girl out and three of us had a girl out and something accidentally happened in the back seat, you know, we didn't mean for it to happen, we let things go too far, and she asked for, you know, she died, and
right.
Accidentally, we didn't really mean for her to die. Every single boy said, you can believe I would be on the phone with my father. Your Ron didn't even have that problem. His father was his buddy, his drinking buddy, and so forth. So I think that he easily called his father, who was a lawyer, who knew how to think, who could think level-headed, and knew the legal system and what to do. You had all these advantages, and this was Aruba, you know. So, and then there were other things I go into in the book that you could tell from comments from Paulus that he had been involved in the case. But Deepak made some fascinating comments in slips of the pen in his email that indicated that the father was very involved very early, and I go into that in the book and show how he revealed that. But I strongly believe, from logic and from what happened, that the father advised them to, you know, what to do. And, you know, I go into a timeline, which, if you look at it, it's real interesting that there was a timeline, and they clearly set it. They were into a timeline mode, you know, with having Deepak home on the computer at 2:35. And I don't think he was home. I think that was Satish. But they were clearly in a cover-up mode 40 minutes after she died. I think she died right at 2 a.m., not long after they left. So, you know, I go into the timeline, as you know. I think that is where the father comes in. I think he advised him, cover it up, do this, do that, you know, and,
right.
And nobody, no case. I think he was the one that told him that.
Probably, yeah, exactly. You're described as the ultimate mind hunter, and I think that's a fair description. I'm not trying to embarrass you or anything, but when you look at the mind of Deepak Satish, and in particular Joran van der Sloot, you must have incredible thoughts about that. Let's talk about those.
Well, you know, what's so interesting, Dana, is the breakthrough to the deeper mind, which I participated in clinical research, and I'm a clinician, I'm a psychiatrist, I listen to people, I deal in long-term in-depth therapy to help people. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and you don't rebuild it in a day, and so
right.
I know how to listen to it, and I have tremendous admiration for the human mind. I mean, the unconscious mind is my teacher every day, my patients are my teachers, and I have great respect. And so when I apply this respect and awareness, and I know how it works, and it's brilliant, the unconscious mind I know this will sound exaggerated, it's easily 1,000 times brighter than our conscious mind. You're listening to geniuses every day. So when I go to profile a criminal matter, I learn this, I'm listening to a genius profiler. The best profiler on the case is the unconscious mind of the suspect, if he will talk. And so I listen to every word. I pay attention to every word, every comma, and that tradition goes back in forensic documents nearly 100 years. The really early guys were really good. They knew these commas and all that were significant. But I really learned a lot, and you know, I guess this is my, I don't know, maybe my 20th profile, and over several years, and I've just learned a lot in each case. Deepak taught me a lot. So, and then I look at Joran, and then I look at Satish and how they confirm it. So I have great respect for the human mind, and you sit back, and even though it's a confession of a murder, you sit back and you go, well, dadgummit, they're smart. You know, they really, they're guiding you. And once you understand this unconscious mind, the criminal is guiding you, you start paying attention. And today I was talking to one of the, you know, somebody that's involved in the planned search. And we talked about where to search. And we were able to narrow some things down. I saw some things in that profile today I'd never seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the email that it matches up with the structure of the ocean, the oceanographic clues. And there's a particular place in the ocean to look. And I think that they tell us that in the email. And so you end up understanding the criminal is going to guide you to the solution. You know, and it's the old police thing. Give a criminal enough time and he'll hang himself.
Right.
You know that old, you know that,
exactly.
That idea.
Yep.
They know right from wrong, and they're going to break, or they're going to trick themselves sometimes. So you just know that, and you put all this wisdom together, and now we know how the mind works. So, it's a fascinating process.
absolutely. When I read you the term, we were the three guys, that's an important term. Again, we don't want to give away the whole book, but let's talk about that major confession.
Yeah, I think it starts out, that he starts out in the book telling you right off, we were the three guys, it was in the news, and see, the news is Deepak. This is the Deepak news, and he's telling you, you want to know the news, this is the news. It was three of us, and it was in my car.
Right.
And so we were the three guys, and see, right off, he's telling you, don't fall for the 101B story. Now, what's so interesting, Dana, is they started out with a plan that I think came from Paulus. Deepak, we need some hard evidence. I mean, some hard, you know, supportive evidence. So, Deepak, you get home and you be home on your computer. It's really Satish, and you appear to be, talking to Yaron. And so, we want a one-on-one story. And what makes the most sense is Yaron being alone on the beach with her. That's the one we can all buy. And he left her. I say buy. This is the most logical. He and Natalie are out there, and they're, you know, alone and making out and having some sexual contact. And he just left her on the beach, and she didn't want to come in. That's the most logical story, rather than three of them just dropped her off and they don't know what happened, which fell apart. But see, the email. Now notice, so they've got a one-on-one plan that they're going to tell you. Beth Twitty shows up 24 hours after the crime, and all of a sudden they've gone to the hotel version, the three-on-one story, which is a lie, which fell apart very quickly. Deepak tried to get a friend to lie for him who did, Stephen Cruz, and then he fell apart and all that. But why, you see, this to me is a major clue. Why did they spin a weaker story, the three-on-one story, that made them look bad, instead of going with the one they had worked on setting up, you know, the evidence for, with Deepak home on the computer? And I think this is where the unconscious confession came in, that they said, well, we need to go with the three-on-one. And they really went with the wrong story as a way of confessing it, because it was a three-on-one story. So you read the lie, and the lie has the truth, because the lie says, well, it's 3-on-1. And they think they're lying to cover up, but they were really lying. The unconscious mind was saying, well, tell them it's 3-on-1. You know, tell them it's 3-on-1 and make up some story. But you just got to read it. It's 3-on-1. That's the answer. And I think that's what the police, I believe that's why they appreciated the profile, is now they start to see that Deepak is cluing them in. Oh, okay, there were three. And they really now believe there were three. And they moved away from the beach story. And this arrest, if you just look at the arrest tells you they believe now that three people were involved. And I think this is what Jossie was saying, that, you know, why the profile was helpful. And by the way, I don't believe there's any new physical evidence in this. I think if there's any new evidence, you know, besides however they consider my profile evidence, it is a witness who's broken or something, you know, like Stephen Cruz or somebody. Because
exactly.
I think when they dug it, you can tell me as a, you know, law enforcement, but when they dug everything up last May or June and didn't find anything, I don't think there's any physical evidence. I think the only physical evidence is going to be the body. And they're going to have to use, you know, the profile, use eyewitnesses or, you know, that type of thing.
Well, we'll find out soon enough.
We will.
Just before I let you go, our time's gone by so fast here, we have a couple of minutes. It's a month from now, and you're going to sit down and write an epilogue to your book. What would you do?
Well, I tell you what I think I'm going to write is the... I hope to be on that search. I don't know if I am or not, but I think this is what I'm going to write. I feel very confident. I think the body is going to be discovered. I think this email confession ties them to this. And in the email, Deepak said, if they find this body, we're in trouble. It's a small island. We're in trouble. This is a confession, and I think that one of them is going to break. They could break sooner rather than later. And I think that the body will be found, and I think somebody will break. That's what I think will happen. But if it doesn't, if it goes to trial and they lawyer up, they're still, you know, this is a 3-on-1, and I think they just can't keep it together. I don't believe three of them can hold this story together. I think it's going to break. So I think we'll know. My prediction is a month from now. I think within the next 3 weeks we're going to know. That's what I believe.
Your website again is?
ForensicThoughtPrints.com. Like fingerprints, think fingerprints, but it's ThoughtPrints, ForensicThoughtPrints.com.
And the book is Into the Deep. Andrew Hodges, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it as always. Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. Okay, bye-bye. That's Andrew Hodges, the author of Into the Deep. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in a minute with Susan Murphy Milano, and we're going to talk about her new book, Moving Out, Moving On, and the safety plan that you should know if you are in a relationship where there is domestic violence and you're not sure what to do. And of course, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Drew Peterson case. This is Dana Pretzer on the Dana Pretzer Show. Gee, that's a coincidence, on Scared Monkeys Radio. Our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We'll be right back.
We're back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on scaredmonkeysradio.com.
That's right. We are back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Moving Out, Moving On is a practical resource to safety and sanity for all of our lives. The information you receive should take you from the state of being controlled to the state of being in control. And the person behind that, Susan Murphy Milano, is on the air with me now. And we're going to talk about a safety plan and what you can do if you are in an abusive relationship. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the program. Of course, last time you were on, you and I talked heavily about the Drew Peterson case, and we'll talk a little bit about more, or a little bit more about that this evening. But the safety plan, I think, is so important for those that are in this relationship where there is abuse and they just don't know what to do. I saw some YouTube videos that you produced that talk about this. You know, those that, and because it's been in the media so much lately, those that are in relationships with law enforcement officers. Of course, the tragic story of your mother and your father, a law enforcement officer who killed her and then himself, brings this all to fruition. But let's talk about the safety plan and how important that is.
I think what has been the problem as well is that with all this press on all these cases and these situations, nobody is telling people what to do.
Exactly.
And it's sort of... from the emails and the calls that I receive, it's very difficult for these women to feel empowered, to have the information, and there's been no balance. So I appreciate the ability to even provide this information, because you have to have enough time to prepare when you're going to leave an abusive relationship, especially if you're married and you have kids.
No.
And it can be done. There's many times when a woman feels that she could just take the child or children out of the state, and it's very important for her to know that she needs to find out from the state that she can't just take the children and cross state lines, because she could potentially be charged with kidnapping.
Let's talk.
I don't say that to scare anyone. I say that to say.
No. It needs to be said, because obviously when you're in that kind of a relationship, you're not thinking clearly, and you need to have whatever you can as a resource or a support to help you.
And you need to have a plan, and you need to know that it's also a good idea to go to your area police department as well,
mm-hmm.
give them a letter, friends and family, if you can, your little video.
Yeah.
We have video cameras and things, all kinds of tools to access to let somebody know what's going on so that he can't go and have you charged or say she's missing,
yeah,
and that she dropped out of sight. That's first and foremost if you have children. You have to begin sitting down and draft a plan. You have to gather important papers, you know, your birth certificates, Social Security cards, marriage certificates, insurance policies. We forget to do that.
Yeah.
Your bank account numbers, IRA, 401Ks, the credit union. A lot of times we don't think about the credit union documentation. Income tax returns for the past 3 years. You're going to need that, because you're not going to be able, if you have to hire a lawyer, you're not going to be able to have, you have to go in as your own best advocate. You're not going to be able to have intelligent conversation with a lawyer who's going to represent you. And you've got 45 minutes to an hour of free time with that first consultation of that lawyer. So you should have those documents with you, and don't let a lawyer intimidate you. You know, when you walk into somebody's office, just because they have a law degree on their wall does not mean that they know everything. And it's very important, if you are seeking a divorce in an abusive relationship, that you make sure the person you're seeking legal services from, that their practice is more than 50%. And I said more than 50%, because you don't need somebody who's a general practitioner and 60% of their practice is criminal, or 60% of their practice is other things other than divorce, because it's like driving a different bus. You want to try to find a lawyer who both knows divorce and child custody if you have children, because those type of lawyers know exactly what to do, and they are very much up on the matrimonial laws across the country.
You know, something that's so important, and you cover it here, but something that you don't think about right away, is there anything from keys to your house to glasses to prescription medication to school records, those sorts of things? If you're in a rush and you want to get out of there, you're not covering that. Let's get into some of the basics that maybe some people in domestic relationships that are violent aren't thinking about when they're planning on leaving.
Your children's school records are very important. Your children's dental records, medical records, again, you said the eyeglasses, hearing aid device, prescription medication. It's also a good idea when you're doing this with your credit cards. A month before you leave, if you're able to secure a new address or have the address go to a P.O. box or someone else, to go ahead and already begin preparing the documentation to have your information changed. You're not going to, no one's going to know but you, especially if you have a P.O. box because you're the one that has the key. Make sure that your car is serviced before you leave. Make sure that it's running properly. Make sure that you have extra set of keys someplace. If you need glasses, make sure you get an extra set. Make sure that you know, you have all your ATM cards and that you've made changes to your bills, and you've made changes to everything in your personal information, including maybe your accountant or your doctor that you go see. So if you can, try to get and do those things ahead of time. Pay attention maybe a month or two before to the bills that you get in, and flag those as the ones that you're going to go ahead and make changes to. It's also important with the bank accounts and with safety deposit boxes. You have to do the same thing. And then passwords. Passwords are very important. In my opinion, you don't do anything that somebody knows, and you put two passwords on it. If you have to have somebody close to you that you trust, like, you know, your mother or your sister, I wouldn't go beyond that.
Right.
Give them the passwords in case you should lose them. Also, you should make sure that your car is your lifeline to get back and forth to work. Make sure that it's been serviced. Make sure that it's up to date on its records. Make sure your insurance, a lot of times when you move, you have to change your car insurance, your health insurance information. Make sure, in a lot of cases, you're going to be able to go ahead and send or have that address go to the P.O. box.
Absolutely.
It's about being 10 steps ahead.
Absolutely. It's the age of technology today. Everyone has a computer, a laptop, whatever. Let's talk about that.
Internet safety. Very, very, very important. You have to be stingy about your personal information. You need to have a need-to-know approach for your personal data. And if someone's calling you and you don't know who they are, don't offer any information. Let's say somebody, and this has happened when I ran an agency for vetted women, somebody would call and say, well, we're trying to get a hold of them. They won a prize.
Right.
They won a refrigerator or a car. Hang up the phone. If you are leaving or you have left and you get a phone call from the school, and they call and they say, well, we told them that you were going to be on their way and something's happened to the child or to a relative of yours. They called and said something's happened to somebody close to you. Don't believe it. You need to sit there calmly, take a deep breath, have your lawyer deal with it.
So being prepared is just so important, and realizing that these are things that you need to do. Let's cover a few more while we have some time.
If you're traveling, you have your mail held at a post office. Or with somebody that you trust. If you have a telephone, if you have to telephone somebody while you're traveling and you have to pass on personal information when you're calling, don't do it, you know, in an open phone booth with a passerby. You just don't know. You have to check your financial information before you leave and see what credit cards are in his name, your name, in joint. Let's say that you've moved and He's located you, just to skip for a moment, and he breaks in.
Right.
The first thing you need to do is run and call 911 very quickly. And if he's coming in the door, now what you should do before you move into that place is you should make sure that there's double bolt doors,
yep,
locks. Even there's the movie Home Alone where the kid put the cans and the different things by the door. Whatever kind of a noisemaker, your children's toys, sticky stuff on the windowsills, nails, things that if somebody's going to break in, they're going to cut themselves and yell out.
Yep.
That's very important. But if somebody should break in, you dial 911, they will hear what's going on, and you throw it in a wastebasket and lock yourself in a safe area.
Yep.
Again, your house, ladders and different things, if you're moving into a building, workman or somebody coming to your door and saying, you know, we're the telephone company or the electric company, you have to be very careful. I really don't care if they show your identification to you. You don't acknowledge it. You don't address it. You don't let them in. You just don't know. Maybe this person is a friend of the person that you're in the relationship with. They will do anything that they can to try to find out where you are. There's an internet safety link that is www.e, as in Edward, D as in David, V as in Viper, P as in Peter, .org. And it's a safety link that provides you all the information for identity theft and fraud and what also to do with to not do things at computers. Or if you have to do something at your home computer, you make sure that you've erased it. Your mortgage. A lot of times, if you have a mortgage and the lender doesn't know what's going on and the person that you're married to is going to not pay that mortgage, you need to make arrangements ahead of time.
Yep.
There has been, I had a case where somebody that looked identical to somebody going through a divorce and an abusive relationship showed up at a bank counter, said, I lost my checks. They didn't ask her for her identification, and they gave her the new checks, but the new address was on them.
Wow.
Where the person was so that the alleged offender was able to locate her. These people will stop at nothing. You don't leave comments on an internet site because I'm telling you that they will show up. If you, Dana, you probably like football and you see a football game and you're commenting on one of those sports sites.
Sure, yep.
If I put your name in there, and I did this with somebody the other day, it came up.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to it and went, oh, gosh.
Yep.
There this man was in the sports commentary section. His name popped up on a Google search.
Yep. Yeah.
Just from leaving your name.
Oh, it's just, it's amazing.
Don't enter sweepstakes.
Yeah.
Don't, and also you have to pay attention to the internet, because when you get something in the mail, or pardon me, on the internet, and it says to you, we have to correct your information, something's not right, never, ever respond to those things.
Right.
Never. Go to the bank yourself in person.
Absolutely. And it's all such good advice and such important advice. And, you know, I want to stay in touch, and I think we need to do more stories like this. But unfortunately, our time is just about up. Again, it's Susan Murphy Milano and movinginmovingout.com. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much. Have a nice holiday.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Dana Pritzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. I want you to go to this webpage right now, www.cnn.com/heroes. You'll remember Pat Badraha as a guest of mine a long time ago. He's a young boy with leukemia who started the Driving for Donors program. He is a contestant in the Heroes campaign that CNN is putting on. And if there was ever a willing and worthy participant and someone who should win this competition, it is Pat. You can go on there again, cnn.com/heroes, and vote as many times as you want. I'll bet you I've voted a couple hundred times for him already. And here's the interview that I had with Pat. This is a kid who has more strength than any of us will ever have, and he deserves to win this competition. Hi, we're back. This is the Dana Pritzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Do you remember Pat Badraha? I do, and many of you won't forget him. He's the brave young man that started the Driving for Donors campaign. He's been on the program before. I want you to go to this website. Do it right now. It's simple, and I want you to go do this not only for me asking you, but for Pat, because it's important. www.cnn.com/heroes. www.cnn.com/heroes. You will see there that Pat is one of the candidates for the CNN Heroes campaign, and there's a little video clip that you can see, hear Pat talking. Just go and vote for him. It's that simple. If anyone deserved to win this competition, it is Pat. On the phone with me now is Claudine Andrews, Pat's mom. Hi, Claudine.
Hi there. How are you?
Welcome back to the program. You know, when you talk about being brave, when you talk about confidence, when you talk about being able to handle adversity, that boy of yours, Pat, is just unbelievable. Tell us what's been going on with him since he's been on the program, and let's talk about the Heroes campaign.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having us back on. We've been pretty busy since we spoke to you last. We have finished our 32-city national marrow drive called Driving for Donors.
Right.
And in the past several months, we've added over 6,000 donors to the National Marrow Donor Program Registry.
Wow.
Yep, and we've actually just found our first matching donor for someone in need, so that's really exciting.
Fantastic.
Along the way, we met a lot of interesting people, and Patrick was chosen to be featured on the CNN Heroes segment, if you're familiar with that.
What is the CNN Heroes segment? I'm familiar with it, but let's inform the audience a little bit.
Well, CNN picks people who are, you know, doing outstanding things, and they highlight them on their channels. Dana, are you still there?
I'm still here, yep.
Oh, I thought I lost you there for a moment.
No, I'm still here.
Well, they profile people that are doing outstanding things, and they pick Patrick for his National Marrow Drive. When it had a great response, it was shown throughout the U.S. and internationally. And then they take the favorite heroes in several different segments or categories.
Right.
And Patrick was in the Young Wonders category. So now CNN is doing an online vote for people, all their viewers, to pick their favorite hero. And Patrick just won in the Young Wonders. So now he's one of six finalists worldwide.
Fantastic.
Are competing in this vote to go to a CNN All-Star Tribute. And that'll be a live global broadcast to CNN December 6th with Anderson Cooper and Christiane Amanpour. And that's really exciting because he really wants the chance to tell the entire world about the need for marrow donors. So we're asking people to go and vote for Pat.
Well, how important is that? And again, it's cnn.com/heroes. You'll see the little icon with Pat's picture. You can check out the video, a little video clip that they have. And all you got to do is put a check mark in the box and click vote. It's that important. Now, again, adversity, being able to overcome things like this, it always amazes me the strength, especially in young people that are able to come forward, kind of set aside their own issue, but try to help others. How is Pat feeling? That's important for us to know.
Pat's feeling really well. He finished his first intense year of chemotherapy several months ago, and so he'll still have another 2.5 years of chemo to go. But he is feeling well, and he's back to school for the first time in about 1.5 years. So he couldn't be doing better.
How fantastic is that? Is it possible for us to have a chat with Patrick?
It is possible. He is right here, and he's excited to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi.
Hi, Patrick. How you doing, buddy?
Good, how are you?
Welcome back to the program. You know, last time you and I talked, it's a while ago, you were just starting the Driving for Donors program. You've kicked butt on that. You've started to feel better. That's important. And now you're one of the CNN heroes. Tell us a little bit about the Heroes Competition and what you think about it.
Well, the Heroes Competition I got picked at a CNN Heroes that is... I won my Young Wonders category out of, like, I think it was all in total about 30 people worldwide, and I got picked as a Young Wonder, and I won the Young Wonders category, and now I'm in the top, in the final six, and I'm having everybody vote for me to be a CNN hero, because then I can go on to be on a live segment with Anderson Cooper, and that would get so much awareness out there for the marrow donors.
That's important, isn't it? Let's talk about the awareness for marrow donors. You did the Driving for Donors campaign. People that don't understand this or not sure what this is all about, tell them about how they can become part of the donor registry.
Well, you can go to our website. It's drivingfordonors.com, and there it shows you how to become a donor there. And really, just becoming a donor is easy. All it is about 10 minutes of paperwork and a cheek swab, and then you know you could be the one to save someone's life.
How have you been feeling, my friend?
I've been feeling wonderful.
I hear you're back at school.
Yes, I'm back at school. I have kept all A's and B's, and I'm doing great.
How about a girlfriend?
No.
No time for that. You're busy with other things.
Yes.
So how cool would that be to be on TV with Anderson Cooper?
That would be so much fun. It would be such an experience, and I would cherish it.
How can people go and vote for you?
They can go to cnn.com/heroes, or they can go to our website, drivingfordonors.com.
When does the competition close, Pat?
It closes Monday the 26th.
So we need to get in there and vote. We can vote as many times as we can?
Yes, we're asking everybody if they can just vote as and many times as they can. Maybe at least 20 times a day. It sounds like a lot, but it really isn't. And if they could just do that, everybody could vote 20 times or more a day, then I think we'd be good.
Absolutely. You know, you're doing great work. I'm glad that you're feeling better. And we'll all go again to CNN.com/heroes and vote for Pat. I have. In fact, I voted about 50 times, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Thank you.
Can I talk to your mom again for one sec?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Hello there.
Well, I tell you what, Mom, you do have a young wonder. He is as brave a kid as I ever know, and we're going to work real hard here on the program to get him as many votes as we can.
I appreciate it, because he is certainly my hero, so I want everyone else to know what a hero he is.
Darn right. Thank you, Claudine.
Thank you.
Take care.
He's here asking if he can come on again after the results.
Absolutely. He's welcome on my program anytime.
Thank you so much for your help.
We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Again, if there was ever a time to do something, do it now. www.cnn.com/heroes. This kid needs our support. My God, if we were all as strong as he is. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. And again, cnn.com/heroes. Vote for Patrick as many times as you can. He's a well-deserving young man. That's it. That's tonight's show. Let's remember, we want truth for Natalie, justice for Natalie, and let's hope that today's developments actually lead to something. Our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can pick up the podcast of the show there a little bit later on, plus our daily commentary. I want to thank all my guests, and thank you for listening. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.